Mr. Cutlets, Mr. Cutlets, when you swing around that pork chop, I get a whiff of heaven every time you pass my doorstop. With the chicken and the brisket and the marrow and the giblets, Mr. Cutlets, spend some time with me. I know it's crazy, but it's true. It's not worth eating if it lacks the greasy.
Hi there. I'm Josh Ozersky, a.k.a. Mr. Cutlets, New York's most conspicuous carnivore, and the host of the Mr. Cutlets Show here on the Heritage Radio Network. We're here broadcasting on Pirate Satellite from Roberta's wonderful sweetbread house in Bushwick, New York. I have here my beautiful co-host, Stephanie Cohen.
Hello.
Stephanie is a reporter for one of our top New York daily newspapers.
Yep.
Metro Dailies, as we say.
Yep.
We also have a couple of special guests in studio today. On my left, in the freezing shipping container that this is broadcast from, we have...
Directions.
It is cold in here.
Right?
What's that?
Left means nothing to the listening audience.
Well, the listening audience has
and
a mental
really
picture
to your
of
left
all this.
In any capacity.
The fellow grousing to my left is English Nick Solaris. Nick is one of the city's best bloggers and food writers. He is the chief hamburger critic for Hamburger Today. He previously had a site, which he still maintains, called The Beef Aficionado. And now he's going to talk to us today also about his new gig as the chief New York pizza critic for Slice, which is the...
Congratulations.
Thank you.
And also...
No, I'm getting warm.
I see. I thought she's giving me the cut it off gesture, but she's really just warming her palms.
Oh, it's freezing in here.
We have Sebastian Zepp. Is that... Did I say it right?
Yeah, that's pretty close. Zepp.
Zepp. That's what I said. Zip?
It's a weird Dutch pronunciation.
Sebastian is a Dutchman, but he's better known to us as the chef of Bar Blanc Bistro. Mm-hmm. And Bar Blanc Bistro is one of those, I think, underrated restaurants. I think he's talented. He used to work for David Boulay, and then he was with Count Chocula over there at Gilt under that administration. And also, you did time at Gramercy Tavern.
Yep.
And so we'll talk to him, too. Mm-hmm. Steffi, we got here late, but this is good.
And now, you're doing great. I mean, we were a little flustered on the drive over, totally have you're sounding calm,
no,
smooth.
I had it
together.
I had throbbing veins in my temples and white knuckles on the wheel.
You kept punching everything.
Stephanie, you were about to congratulate me, I think, on my new column in Time.
I love the column in Time.
By the look of... You were about to say something about...
Something complimentary about you. I love the column. And the fact that it was the most read that day.
Most read and emailed.
It's a controversial subject.
Well, the subject, of course, was Domino's Pizza reboot. And I had occasion to quote English Nick and his review of Patsy's. Now, Nick, you never would eat a Domino's pizza.
I almost feel compelled to eat one at this point. I haven't had Domino's pizza in probably since about 93.
Well, it was good then. I mean, it wasn't good,
but I'm sure it served some function.
I had one recently.
Did you?
Did you have the new one or the old
one? The improved one?
I had it, and also I had the experience of ordering it, where they show you on the website how long it's being put in the oven. It is, the dough is rising. The delivery man has left. Like, it has a whole digital
display.
They
should have the little sonogram of it as it's growing.
That's,
you know?
That's the only thing that they can deliver, is that they can say they can get it there at a certain amount of time because it's, you know, not good. But it's just bread and cheese and tomato sauce.
But they admitted to you as much that...
Yeah, no, they said...
It's about delivery. Well, they knew they were second rate.
Yeah.
But that was their first rate in delivery, and that's what people...
Right.
I mean,
and it's not that bad.
Yeah,
it's just kind of chewy.
It also has to be said that... For some people, that's what pizza is. They've never had anything other than that. If you grew up in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and your first pizza was a Domino's or the original Domino's, that's what pizza is to you. It's the Sam Sifton pizza cognition theory. The first,
which is
the first slice of pizza that a child eats that makes an impression on him,
uh-huh,
is what he defines as pizza.
I don't
Everything
think that's
else
true.
Is not pizza.
But that's not true for us. You weren't given
no, but we think
Vera
food,
Pizza Napolitana in the womb? Or
no, but you know, I lived in Italy as a child, and I went to Italy a lot. And as a foodie and as a pizza
Stop
lover...
Stop whispering over there.
Sorry.
As a foodie and a pizza lover, you want to disprove that, right? You want to be able to assimilate yourself into all forms of pizza, or at least the ones that are worth assimilation into. Like, which I think Neapolitan is.
Well, Nick and I have a difference about this. I mean, I made the case in the Time piece that, you know, I'm from Atlantic City, which is by no means a foodie mecca. And I like the low moisture mozzarella, the greasy traditional low moisture mozzarella that melts into the sauce. Now, Nick.
The pizza you grew up on.
Well, it's true. But on the other hand, DeFara has raised that pizza to the highest imaginable level, which is why I love it. So maybe you're right. But what I was going to say is, you, and this is something that you should have out there as the critic for Slice, people should know, you know, that you're oriented. You really love the Vera Pizza Napolitana. For you, that's the
paradigm.
Tell
us what that is.
I do. What that is basically the way that pizza is made in Naples, which is with a bufala mozzarella or a fiordalat, which is a very watery, milky cheese, which doesn't melt with the same evenness as the low moisture mozzarella that mm-hmm. Josh loves, which is what, if any New York pizza uses that generic low moisture, it's the perfect cheese for melting, especially if you're going to leave your pizza sitting around for
hours. And what's right? what's my feeling about about cheese for hamburgers?
American cheese,
right?
For the same reason,
for the exact same reason.
It's two cheeses that were really designed for what they. I don't think bufala mozzarella was designed for pizza. It just happened to be incorporated into it. But American cheese is very much designed to be put on hamburgers.
Well, you know what I like is Federico. I can never remember Federico's last name, but he at Gnocco. He's a very talented Roman pizzaiolo who works on East 10th Street at Gnocco. And when he makes his bufala pizza, when he's a Roman, I like the Roman pizza better, so it's a little crispier. Yeah. And then he takes that out. And he puts gobs of fresh, torn chunks of mozzarella di bufala on it after it's done.
And lets that melt the...
It melts a little, but it still maintains its integrity a little bit. And it doesn't turn it into a grody puddle.
No, you know? But that grody puddle is just bad pizza making. Because, believe me, the finest pies I had in Naples, the pies that Motorino now serves...
Well, you have to eat them with a knife and fork, though. You can't lift up those slices. Well,
I know that's, you know... an abhorrent concept to you that actually using utensils
let's not be better
not
than job
hunched over your sink at home. I know that the ideal place
no,
to
the,
eat anything but.
Well, the concept in I will say it was pioneered in your website Slice, the concept of tip sag,
right,
as an index to
tip sag
structural excellence, yes,
which is self-explanatory.
Well, no, it's not I don't think it's necessarily a mark of structural excellence.
We should tell people what tip sag
is.
You should explain all this. This is so insider. I don't know what you guys are talking about.
If you pick up a slice of pizza, which is the other thing, there are no slices of pizza.
No, tell. You got. Okay, tips. Parenthetically, tip sag is when you hold a slice of pizza.
We know. You can tell what that is.
Well, that's what you said. It was super.
But before that.
This is too arcane for us. We can't understand what tip sag is.
It's geometry and the
triangle.
No, just before that, it was a little esoteric about your pizza preferences.
Well, listen.
You like the Roman. You like the
that's why you would listen to something like this, is to listen to people that are, you know, so deeply engaged.
I know. I just want it more explained.
Well, you know what? That's why it's so great to have you as the...
That's what I'm saying. Just explain it more. I want to know, too.
She's foxy, too.
And foxy.
Is she your Robin Quivers, too?
Yes.
I've often thought of it. Right?
I'm not allowed to zot you.
You can zots me now and again. I know
not
you
again.
Couldn't be happy
English
with
Nick is good at zotsing.
Oh, I get warned not to do it.
It'd be better not to.
Because I'll become a sputtering, hostile wreck, you know?
I like the way you drove over here, actually.
Oh, Jesus.
Getting back to pizza.
I know that they're going to give me the high sign soon to tell me that this segment is closing down. No, it seems like we have a couple of minutes. We have 2 minutes. That's good. In those 2 minutes, Nick, sum up all... No, you were saying something
back to
before.
Pizza, and I think what Stephanie was saying, I'm actually a... agnostic when it comes to pizza. When it comes to hamburgers, you know, I love brittle cooked, you know,
okay,
classic American burger with nothing on it. But with pizza, it's even really bad pizza can be
it's good.
put it this way.
It's good. It's pizza more forgiving.
It doesn't kill you the way a bad hamburger will. A bad slice will only make you feel bad. It's not going to kill you. But
it's true.
Yeah.
Because it's just three ingredients that taste good, which is what you said in your column.
Yeah. And also the...
Which is true.
Yeah.
It's a good combination of food.
Well, I've had pizza that I would rather not eat than eat.
Of course.
For example, when a pizza is so grossly overloaded with toppings, like college students get.
How do you feel about Chicago style?
Well, you know what? The Chicago style, somebody thought it out as a structured, composed thing and said, okay, we're going to make a heavier crust to support this and whatever. Anything that it's meant to be eaten that way. It's like, what fills me with white hot fury is like when somebody does it, like they make a French fries and then wrap it up in tin foil and stick it in a bag so it turns into like soggy paste. Oh, well, we have 1 minute left or 1 minute now. Sebastian, why don't you pipe down, huh? You never shut up.
It's pizza. I've eaten. I know, but you guys seem to know way more than I could ever imagine to know about this subject right now.
Well, I'm sure you know more about prostitutes and hash bars than we do. I mean,
but I don't think this is a food. This is a food show, not a prostitute and hash show. I don't think we can.
Don't
go
be
there,
so
right?
Sure.
I don't know.
Why do you think we have Steffi here?
Oh, wow. Hey, there you go.
Nick, why don't we take a break and we'll come back and continue with talking to Nick Solaris from Slice and Hamburger Today, Sebastian Zepp from Bar Blanc Bistro, and me on the Mr. Cutlets Show.
Shine, like you've had too much wine, that's amore. Bells will ring, ting-a-ling-a-ling, ting-a-ling-a-ling, and you'll sing Vita Belle. Hearts will play, tippy-tippy-tay, tippy-tippy-tay, like a gay tarantella. When the stars make you drool, just like a pasta puzzle at Samore. When you walk down a street with a cloud at your feet, you're in love. When you walk in a dream, but you know you're not dreaming, signore. Excuse me, but you see, back in old Napoli, that's amore.
Hi, I'm Josh Ozersky, and we're back on the Mr. Cutlets Show on the Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting out of Roberta's Calzone Capital. Now, before we go on, I'd like to give I won't say a shout-out, because I guess that's become rather hackneyed cliche, but I'd like to pay tribute to our sponsor today, who is Fairway Market. Now, you always, Steffi, you've heard me talk about how much I love the Fairway.
You love the olive oil program.
The olive oil program, I mean. But it just so happens, and Nick just happens to have been there. I actually have Nick here, who is one of the sternest judges of dry-aged beef of anyone I know. Nick, I got a dry-aged rib steaks last night from Fairway, just from the regular counter, no special treatment, just went up and bought them. What was your judgment, objectively speaking, of that steak?
My judgment was I walked in, and you said, look at these. I said, what butcher did you bribe? What? Of the many meat agents that you have your hooks into, did you bribe to procure such amazingly marbled, moldy, succulent, dry-aged beef? And you told me that you'd actually bought it in a supermarket. I was amazed.
It's hard to believe.
It was up there.
It's really, really good.
I mean, it was
USDA.
Have
you not had the Fairway dry-aged
beef? I've never even set foot in Fairway.
And it measured up to you.
I thought that was
so good.
It was fantastic. Moldy, had that musky blue cheese tang.
Let's not get. I mean, it did
we're making,
have
we're
that.
Making, we're making Josh ill.
Well, yeah, I don't like
how
that.
Correctly,
you don't like.
There
that.
Are people out there listening who are like me and don't.
You like wet
long
aged?
For the stench of Roquefort.
Yes,
you know?
There's people that's the reason Ruth Chris Steakhouse is in business.
Right.
People
well, like, anyway, the point is it's a great steak, and then the olive oil. I made spaghetti alla limone, and the Novello is out now. The new olive oil. It's the new olive oil, the new cold-pressed olive oil. Fairway has its own, really its own importer. So they have like the single estate ones or whatever, but then they have this one as the Novella. I don't even know where it's
from.
That's
so cool.
So pops in your mouth. Have you, Sebastian, have you seen?
I haven't been to a fairway in a very, very long time. I lived up in this neighborhood, up in 140th for a while when I first moved to New York, and I would go to the fairway on, like, what is it, 86 around there?
Yeah.
Yeah, and but since then, I haven't been to one, but, like, I'm there for sure, checking out for olive oils and beef.
Now, speaking of olive oils and beef... this is what we call a transition.
Segue, if you
that
will.
Was very eloquent.
You are the chef at the restaurant called Bar Blanc Bistro. Now, yes, the other guy was there before, the bald guy.
The bald, tall Cesar Ramirez guy?
Cesar Ramirez. Yeah. Not to be confused with Cesar Romero.
No.
But you, people don't know that you're as good as he is. And you also make your own charcuterie. And why don't you give us a little overview of the kind of stuff you're doing over there?
I do. I love making my own charcuterie. That's one of the main things that I put a lot of my love and passion in there. I guess the food is very very seasonal, very local, very bistro influenced, but also very playful and very fun and simple, but also robust and exciting.
Well, that's okay, Sebastian, but everyone says that shit. Why don't you tell us, like, two or three...
Seasonal stuff, it's local.
Well, why don't you say two or three dishes of which you're especially proud that
don't
are on
bullshit
the,
us.
That are on the
I made a, head cheese recently that is amazing. I got some beautiful sardines from Rhode Island the other day that we did Escabeche style, and it was phenomenal. And then we do a brined pork chop that we brine for like 4 hours. Simple potatoes, sweet potatoes, chard, and a house-made bacon apple compote.
Okay. I've had that.
Yum.
Yeah, I've had that.
It's a very romantic restaurant, Stephanie, too.
Okay.
Oh,
like, I should take Denise. Denise is actually here. My fiance, Denise, is actually sitting in the corner.
Whispering to me.
You could take Lori there, Nick. The one thing that I find interesting is that Sebastian, you know, I'm writing a column now for Time for this coming week that's about the complex relationship that chefs have with nature.
Mm-hmm.
Because we live in a time where the prevailing aesthetic is that of getting out of the way, simple, then great ingredients, seasonal, green market, mm-hmm. right? But the whole thing that chefs, you know, what makes them successful or not, and what they got, how they judge each other and how people judge them is, you know, what their technique is,
right.
The novelty of their dishes, their originality, their creativity.
And also that a lot of the great dishes were created to cover up bad ingredients.
Not right.
Oh, really? Right. That's funny.
The whole point of saucing was to cover up bad
meat. Oh, really?
Bad meat and salting. And yeah, absolutely.
Oh, I love that. I didn't know that.
Is that a tension that you... that you deal with in the course of operations at
sure day-to-day? Yeah, we try to do new things. I try to like with regard to our dishes, with regards to the food we do, just try to make things as exciting as new, using new techniques. Like we do this people love rillettes, pork rillettes. We decided
tell the people what a pork rillettes are.
Rillettes are is cured usually shoulder of pork that gets confit, so cooked in its own fat or duck fat or goose fat, whatever you have, and then cooled down, taken, added to a blender or by hand, whipped with more of its own cooking liquid and fat added into it, and it gets served cold, usually on toast. It's really rich, unctuous, fatty pork amazingness. We decided to take this concept and make something hot out of it and actually turn it into a slider. We take it, we set this fatty pork meat with... transglutaminase, the meat glue.
Wow.
What shoes, I'm sure. And then onto buns with a little watercress mayo.
I like meat glue.
Meat glue.
What is meat glue?
It's transglutaminase. It's a compound that will break down a realigned protein, and so you can literally glue two pieces of meat together.
People, you know what? That's
in head cheese too.
And no, I don't use head cheese. I use just straight the natural gelatin from the pig head in the head cheese. This is just because it's so much fat and shredded pork. We set it with the head cheese with the meat glue and tube it, roll it, tube it, fry it, put it on a little
tube
bun.
Tube it, fry it.
Wait,
eat
you
it.
Add the meat glue to the head? The head cheese is
no,
not,
no, no. I was confused.
The head cheese is probably just aspic and so forth.
All the natural gelatin from the pig head itself, and the bones and the tongue and teeth and.
Whoa. Teeth.
I mean, you know, the teeth are gone by the time you eat it. The only
there's no crunchiness. It's all tenderness. You know?
The only teeth are my own.
Ideally.
I've had, don't say where, but.
What happened?
I've had the experience of eating charcuterie that still had.
Bones?
Actually, teeth in it.
Ew. We're not going to say where, but the restaurant and the chef are both.
Give us a hint.
Give us
a neighborhood.
No. One of the. World class chef and restaurant. Meanwhile, I had something. I maybe should say this for the next segment. I had something so extraordinarily awful.
Don't taint the segment.
Within, yeah.
Don't,
yeah. Sebastian.
This is a celebrating life segment.
I think I speak for most New York diners when I say that everybody's got a charcuterie program now, and I am not struck especially by it as a novelty per se.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a lot of people would like to be able to tell good charcuterie from bad. Like, everyone's going to give them a plate of various ham slices and say, ah, this is my magnificent charcuterie. And they're like, okay, great.
Oh, sure, why not? Yeah.
What does somebody look for, in your mind, to tell good from bad?
Probably the a cleanliness and flavor. A nice overall saltiness without it being overpowering, still being able to taste the meat. It's really at the end product of charcuterie is the concentration of flavors in these meats. And if you
the quality of the
meat where you start out with is how good the end product is going to be naturally. So you want to taste meat. You want to
taste meat.
You don't want to taste product. You don't want to taste plastic. You want to you don't want to taste where anything, even the meat slicer that they've been using it on. So it's really just they're simply just good meat, really.
That's so true. So often when you have it, it's not like eating meat. It's just like a roll up or something.
It's like a candy.
Yeah, it's just like
it's
salty,
like meat candy.
Salty jerky.
Yeah, you're tasting process and technique as opposed to actual flavor. Right.
Right. Well, which means that it's bad process and bad technique. Mm-hmm. It should be invisible.
It's getting in the way of what you should be tasting.
You know, I'm gonna see if I can. When we go inside, I'm gonna try to get some gabagoo to put on the pizza here, even though it's not an option. I'm going to try to scam that. All right. That's the end of this segment. I think we should take a little break.
So underhanded.
On the Mr. Cutlet Show. Exactly sure what the significance of that music
was. Whose iPod was that on?
Quite minstrel. I felt like with that harpsichord playing, like I wanted to start doing needlepoint. You know, like
maybe that's the music to make charcuterie by.
Music to make charcuterie by. I could see that like in an album in cursive. You know, like we're here back on the Mr. Cutlet Show at the Heritage Radio Network. Here at Roberta's Capicola Barn, and this is Josh Ozersky. I write about meat. I have a column on Time Online. You can read my cooking columns on rachelray.com, and my book, The Hamburger History, is out in remainder tables everywhere. Now,
do you want to talk about how you can buy Viagra if you go to the feed bag?
Yes, the feed bag, my erstwhile home online, was hacked into by Canadian Viagra.
What?
Yeah, everyone, if you went to the feed bag, it was like all That's about Canadian brilliant. Viagra. So they had to pull it down.
It's those kids. It's like 12-year-old boys in chat
They don't
rooms.
Need it.
No, but they're the ones that hack the computer. They that come up with these scams.
You know, somebody sent me the letter the other day. They says, my name is Mina. I have open heart. And I was like, really? Like, can you send your picture? You know? And like, if you write them back, or the guy from the Congo that mm-hmm. wants to give you $1 million.
Yeah, what happens when you write that guy back?
I'm like, okay, please give me your bank account information so that I can deposit it, you know? Nothing happens. Nick, I'm hoping you'll save me from ruin here. Nick, you were saying that aside from your duties at Hamburger Today and at Slice, you're also doing a cheap lunches and high-end restaurants reviews?
Yes. I don't know if cheap lunch is the right way. Bargain lunch.
Okay.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
I want to know about a good bargain lunch.
Well, this is a great gig. I have burgers, pizza, and then thrown in the mix... fine dining at high-end restaurants.
Well, what
yeah,
like
it's just
what?
Basically like what you like well, to eat. You decided to
my first
turn that's into
how,
your
that's
career.
That's how we do it.
Yeah, that's quite nice.
Yeah, that
you know what they say about food writers? They don't get paid, but they eat well.
That's true. It's really true.
And Josh is a millionaire. Look at the man.
That is...
<Pa-ching>!
So what I'm going to be doing, I've actually only had a couple of meals, which I'm not going to divulge yet, but it's... I mean, if you want to... If
are you going undercover?
No.
Well, give us an example. I'm sure we can all think of.
Oh,
can you give us a couple of good...
I think the whole Jean-Georges operation has like a
$28
lunch, and it's at most of the restaurants.
And it's any two courses at Jean-Georges. It's not just like you can go and have like pea soup or an oyster. Like you can actually have
it's the real,
any entree and any...
Alto. I think it's $34 for two courses and only another... a supplemental for a third, but... You know, you're talking about world-class cuisine.
Truly world-class cuisine. And then also, you know, there's a terrific lunch deal at Danielle has got a good one in the cafe area there. Gramercy still has... I went to Gramercy the other day, and they had a meat... not a meatloaf, but a roast beef sandwich. I'm going to go on the record now, okay, as saying... No one else has said this yet, but I'm saying it now... The roast beef sandwich is the next fried chicken. You got the two mooks over there in Artichoke doing it, right?
Easy.
Yeah, they're going to kill me. And
at the pizza place, they're making roast beef?
No, they're going to open a roast beef sandwich place, and it's going to be great. It's going to be great. Now, you got the roast beef sandwich at Gramercy Tavern, which was like $17 or something.
So you're talking about you got the high end, and now you have the low... You know, you have the low end. You have the
at
affordable.
Some point they blur though. That's the beauty part. You
where
know?
Does a place like DeFonti's factor into this?
DeFonti's
are you envisioning a roast beef in the Chicago style?
Well,
like
you know,
Italian
it's
style?
So funny you happen to say that, Nick. I actually happened to cross, and I wrote about this on Rachel Ray. I happened to cross a true Chicago style Italian beef sandwich. There's a place in Gowanus.
Wait, okay, in New York.
Because, yeah, in New York.
Well, you say that like you didn't specify that. You're like, I found a real Chicago sandwich in Chicago.
Well, it would be no feat to find a Chicago sandwich
Nick,
style
the rest of us figured
in
it.
Chicago.
You would think so, but
well, anyway. This one is even more of a feat because it not only is it in New York, it's in Gowanus. I mean, this is a place where you're lucky to be able to buy, you know, a bag of flour in. I mean, and when you do get a bag of flour, usually it's like, you know, not supposed to be flour. Now, I went to a restaurant called the Crooked Tail Cafe, which is on 3rd and President Street.
What brought you there?
Well, Dave Cook, who is another intrepid blogger, writes a blog called Eating in Translation, had alerted me to it. And what Dave liked was not so much the roast beef sandwich as the lasagna sandwich.
Mm.
Oh, what a freakishly enjoyable thing that is, the lasagna
is that
sandwich.
Like, if you were on the Atkins diet, is that what you eat to repent?
Kind of, that's basically. It's got meat in it too, but and then I sprinkled potato chips to give it texture.
Oh, very
it has like little ruffles.
That's
come with
Cuban
it.
Version, right?
But What about you, Sebastian? I imagine you serve lunch at Bar Blanc Bistro.
No, we only do brunch on Sundays. We no lunch at the moment.
No, why not?
We're a very small little restaurant. We just don't have the
manpower.
The manpower, really, to pull it off at the time.
You know what I like to do is to go to a restaurant. Like, there's a lot. Everyone knows about the great restaurants, the Altos and La Bernardin's or whatever. Like, but the restaurants that I think what separates the real New York insiders who like eat out a lot from, you know, people who are
rational
is the places like the really first rate small operations. Bar Blanc Bistro is one. Perilla is another one. You know, a few places come to mind like that, and like you could go and eat there, and then you get enough that you take it home and you have a lunch the next day. Like his pork chop, if you get his pork chop rare, then the next day you can sear it up in a little of the Fairway olive oil or whatever, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You have a piece of bread from somewhere.
It's a meal and a half.
Yeah.
Or a leftover spaghetti. You know, with a Fairway olive oil.
You make a sandwich out of that.
Well, you know, anything you get, you can use what I call the DeFara method. Because it's what DeFara does, but it's something that I...
Of course it's not. Yeah, it's about something that you do.
It's always...
Yeah.
It should really be the Ozowski method.
Right.
Well, I'd be immodest, perhaps, to call it that, but nonetheless.
It is.
It's my move. Michael White even said that I taught him it.
Hold on a sec. Do you want to just repeat that last sentence?
He said, Michael White said, I gave him that move.
Nice. What's the move?
You take something like a slice of pizza or a old pork chop or a old fusilli, and you put it in a nonstick pan with a little of the really good olive oil, and you turn it on super low, mm-hmm. and you go away and forget about it. And then when you come back, like 45 minutes later,
uh-huh.
like stumbling in your pot stupor, like you say, oh, I forgot about it, you know. And like the bottom is incredibly golden brown, bronze, crispy, crackly, brittle without being burnt. And more importantly, the top is just warm. Because nothing's more disgusting than molten cheese.
I think you've done that preparation for me, and I cannot say it wasn't amazing. I mean, it sounds like it'd be good.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
How are we doing there? Three more minutes. Well,
one round.
Mm-hmm. Now, Sebastian, you've worked for David Boulay. You mm-hmm. worked for Paul Liebrand.
Yes, I did.
You worked at Gramercy. Was that under
I was on John Schaefer.
John Schaefer.
And Tom Click, yeah.
So those are three totally different approaches
cooking. Yeah, absolutely.
And I wonder if you could say something about like what they, why they're different, and what you kind of got from them. And don't say the respect for ingredients or you know your love of the
dirt.
Passing season.
I guess Paul taught me, boldness and arrogance.
Good answer.
I guess John was more. That was my first restaurant here in New York, so that was more just really learning what a New York restaurant was like.
You were like peeling potatoes. Or something.
Well, not so at the beginning, yeah, I guess, but that was more like really just kind of getting to grips with what a restaurant is in New York. So maybe I guess that's what John taught me, and then Boulay taught me a lot of ways how to do things, but almost even more how not to do things.
Like how?
Just like your day-to-day operations and just your, you know, don't get me wrong, he's an amazing chef, but he's also quite a, he has his way and everybody else has got to catch up to him.
Well, like what's an example of that?
Finding out at 5 o'clock on a Friday night that there's a private party that you have to go to and he takes everybody's mise en place for your Friday night and you got to run around and do everything all over again and you got 120 people coming in half an hour.
Jesus H. Christ, that can't be easy, huh?
It happens. Yeah, you know, what are you going to do?
What about Lee Brandt, the whiz kid? How is he like to work for?
Good. He's very, very talented. He knows what he's doing. He's got a very, very good style, a very good sense. But I guess probably the closest to working for somebody if I was to work in Europe. In the sex, like, you know, you're the cook, you're the grunt, you work. You don't laugh. You don't talk. You don't know that thing. And he's the guy.
We chef.
His way goes. We chef. You don't nothing.
It's that medieval caste system.
Well, he's an Englishman like you, Nick.
Yeah, but the whole hierarchy of the kitchen goes. It's a medieval
Is it really?
It's like almost in the army.
It's very different.
Oh, really?
Than here in New York.
It's interesting.
And he's still very structured in that sense.
Well, like, also you're not laughing and talking during service.
Oh, I laughed at it. My first week, I laughed at one of his jokes.
Yeah.
And he said, "Oh, you don't know me well enough to laugh at my jokes."
No.
Oh, my
straight.
God.
Yeah, serious. It was.
That's brilliant.
Holy
shit. What a good a-hole, though.
It's like army.
He is a great technician, but he's a product of it. That's why he acted like somebody treated him like that. Like, that's how it is in those fields. Like,
I have a question.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No. Go on.
Now, does anyone ever want to go on Top Chef? I think you should go on Top Chef.
Well, all right. Well, no. You know what? I'm glad that you interrupted me to ask that question.
I want to know.
Let's take a break. Do young chefs
want to do that?
This is a deep question. Let's take a break and we'll come back to talk about it on the Mr. Cutlet Show.
Just to have you near, tell me you will try to slip away somehow. Oh, I need you, darling. I want to see you right now. Can you slip away? Slip away. Slip away, yeah. Oh, I need you so.
Hi, I'm Josh Ozersky, a.k.a. Mr. Cutlets, and we're here on the Mr. Cutlet Show on the Heritage Radio Network. I've got Sebastian Zepp, the chef from Bar Blanc Bistro. Which is the address of Bar Blanc Bistro?
It's at 142 West 10th Street, between 6th and 7th Avenues in the West Village.
It's a chic and elegant restaurant that women like the room and men like the pork chops. I've got English Nick Solaris here.
That's your ad campaign.
I've got English Nick Solaris, who is the main hand. Really, it's an amazing double do. It's almost like when Olivier was like Oedipus and Mr. Puff in back-to-back plays. Like, he does the hamburger reviews for Hamburger Today, and then
Mr. Puff is what I'm going to end up being.
Markets is where you are.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we have your new gig, which is the chief pizza critic for New York pizza critic for Slice.
And because
he's the Olivier of the food blogging
world.
Well,
because they thought I was delving too much in the lowbrow, now I'm doing the high-end lunch also. So.
And the high-end lunch. But you won't tell us?
Well, actually, you mentioned David Boulay, and I did my first meal was at Boulay, and I would say you're gonna have to tune in, but it's a fantastic deal.
Mm-hmm.
$50, and it's an hour and a half, hour and three quarters. It's not lunch in the 10 minute you're out sense, but it's you're getting a huge slice of what they do at dinner at lunchtime for a fraction of the cost.
You know, it really is true. Like, when you realize what goes into that kind of food and the service and everything else, like, if you can get in and out of there for under $100, which is, and it ends up being a lot more than 50, because what with tax and tip and wine
it's
and everything else.
You drink, yeah. But they have reasonable.
Well, you're not going to have a Yoo-Hoo. I mean, if you go there, I mean, I would. It's true. I'd save money.
But, but it's a different age. I mean, people are, there's that, the other guy, Sean Huguette. That show.
Oh, have you eaten? You know what? Have you eaten his food?
I tried something at the Taste of New York of his, which was quite good. But that's as far I've gone.
I think that guy is seriously talented. I did a making of piece on one of his dishes.
Yeah,
and it's called the Golden Egg, and it was an amazing piece.
I would really like to.
But that restaurant, I'm going to be eating lunch there, so you should join me. They have I think it's a 24.
Oh, that'd be great.
$24 three course lunch.
I would love to go to that. We were talking about two things before. With
Top Chef.
Well, right. You know what? I was going to say something about the tradition of succeeding abuse in generations. But let's talk about Top Chef.
Is there any difference there? It just seems that the Top Chef is sort of the fast track to being abused
well,
nationally.
Well, I think you're right about that. It is, but all of you, settle down. Because I have a unifying thought.
He's going to tell
us
what
the unifying theory of Top Chef.
The way that Paul Lee Brandt and guys like, there's not that many of them his age, but they are like old school. The chef yelled at him when he was a flunky.
Mm-hmm.
And so he worked his way up, and the basis of his authority over his line cooks is that he's been through it. He's been there. He's been yelled at. Mm-hmm. He's worked every station. That's how it's supposed to work.
Okay.
But the model now, and Top Chef is both the greatest symptom and also cause of this, is
comes back
young so-called chefs that are really people that just came out of cooking school and want to go right to the executive level, creating dishes and bossing people around.
Hmm.
And they all it's the chefs
the top
hate it.
Chefification of...
Go ask any chef. Ask Marco about
really?
It.
Really?
Yeah, ask Chang, any of those guys. Sebastian.
Mm-hmm. Are you guilty of it, Sebastian?
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, that you got to build, you got to come up from something. You got to work to where you are. You can't just go from one to the next via a TV show and then expect to be, not that they're not talented people, but, you know, you need that. You need to learn, and that takes years and years and years of hard work and grunting and you know.
You know, how did you decide you wanted to be in the kitchen? How old were you when you started?
I was 19.
You were 19?
Yep.
Because you wanted to buy something? You started the dishwasher?
I did start as a dishwasher, yeah. I didn't want to buy anything.
You wanted
anything.
The new Trans Am?
not exactly. Maybe a new bicycle or something. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
I was living in Toronto, and I was going to culinary school and had friends who opened up a little restaurant in the Kensington Market part of Toronto, and they needed a prep dishwasher, and I jumped on it, and... Yeah, they've never looked
because back. It's such a fun life if you come in as a dishwasher as a young man. I feel like a lot of people stay because they're just like, this is so badass. Like,
yeah, it was badass. It kind of sucked too. I didn't have a dishwasher machine. I did everything by hand, but I did get paid and I got paid in a lot of beer too. And
exactly, and it's like fun.
I was 19.
People.
It was fun. It was crazy.
And
you know?
Could do it to the waitresses.
And you could do it to the waitresses, and you mm-hmm. can make mm-hmm. money, and you like are you know playing with knives and fire.
Well, the dishwasher doesn't. The dishwasher.
Yeah, but I'm just saying the dishwasher sees that, and then you stay in the job. Well,
and there's a lot to learn, and you see like this is very exciting.
Yeah,
really
you can see it's
and,
a cool
you know,
life.
Yeah.
It's an aspirational position.
Yeah. You know Absolutely. What sucks though is that the hardest working and most competent members of any kitchen generally tend to be the Ecuadorian line cooks and dishwashers, and they rarely move up the ladder.
Is that true?
It's true.
It is true.
They don't become head chefs.
Never.
Why is Rarely. That?
Well, there's language issues.
Okay.
And then a lot of them don't want to be the man, too.
No, they just want to do what they do, and they do it well, and that's it. They do it for a couple of years. Some go, some stay.
They
some
don't
go
see
home,
it as a forward-moving...
No, it's a job.
Now, did you want to be a chef, or would you have been happy to have been a chef de cuisine or a sous chef in a good restaurant? The money
No, I've always wanted to be a chef. I've always wanted to... Yeah, to run my own kitchen and have my own everything be mine, and eventually have my own restaurant even.
And is this your first restaurant?
As executive chef, yes.
So, can you kind of give us an idea of what the experience is like, especially like in the early going? Okay, like you finally get your chance, like you're gonna show the world what you can do. I mean,
it's scary. You don't really know what to do. I was a sous chef at Boulay, and I opened Bar Blanc as Cesar's sous chef. So I kind of knew the day to day. Well, very well knew the day to day running of a place. But then you have that whole fear of, oh my God, what if people don't like my food? What if I, you know, that sense, that idea of failing all of a sudden hits you like, oh, now I'm actually putting myself out there. And it's my food now. I'm not the guy behind the scenes making everything happen. I have to do both now. I have to make everything happen and do the food that's going to bring people to the restaurant, run a business, and be exciting and fun and new. And that I just kind of, you kind of just got to do it and push through it and bite and work and work and work and work and work.
How long have you been open?
2 years.
What about cracking the whip? Like, I got to think that part has got to be hard, especially in the early going.
It was tough. It was kind of a weird transition from Cesar leaving one day. The next day, I took over. So there was a moment I had to sit all the cooks down and be like, oh, you know, this is what happened. We got to talk. You know, different sense of discipline and just running the place was all new. And everything, because he, you know, he ran it one way, and I wanted to do it a different way, and just having to discipline like that was new to me as well.
Well, your food's very tight. I mean, at least what is it, West Side or something? No, I know three.
West Village, yo.
There you go,
West Village. you know, Sebastian. I find this very interesting, but just for the sake of promoting your restaurant, I wonder if you could give us. One or two other specific dishes that you think are good that are on the menu. Maybe one of the Vorspeise part of the menu.
Which one?
Like a full little four spice, a little appetizer.
We do. I think our scallop dish that we do, I think I'm very, very happy with. It's we make a broth out of bib lettuce. It's something I learned from David Boulay, actually. And then
that
we
good.
It's bib lettuce we sweat down with shallots and garlic and some butter and blend it so it's this really rich, very green broth. We have a house-made lardo in there, a little dice of house-made lardo, a little dice of carrots that we toss with some curry, and then these beautiful, beautiful Daybo Maine scallops we sear off really, really nice, and they sit on top of that. And it's got this nice, nice earthy, fresh, green seafood. All this, it all works together really, really well.
You know, I actually ate that.
And did you
I didn't know it was lettuce. I thought it was just... it was some kind of an herb or something, but it was a vegetable.
Did you feel cheated?
How did you
find out? I did.
Vegetable.
I'm surprised you would have ordered that. That seems not your, you know...
I think we sent that one to you,
I don't think you picked out the lettuce and scallops.
I have probably the best picture ever taken of Josh Azerski. We're walking on the way to my house. I said, I have to stop at the organic green market here to pick up some... Actually, it was just butter and cream, but it's organic butter and cream. But he walks past a vegetable aisle and just cowers in the face of... What was it? It was the wheatgrass.
You know, it smells... Those restaurants... health food stores all have that same smell.
All of them. All of them.
They
smell like... It's people that... It just doesn't smell clean. It smells like tofu and beans.
There's also a musky...
Yeah.
Fermenty almost.
You picture that people don't shave there, that work there. That's picture.
That's true. Well, we've
dirty
come...
hippies.
I like that. That's true. The people of Haiti signed a deal with the devil. It's a true fact.
Well, I think we should be clear. We support... the people of Haiti here on the Mr. Cutlet Show. And in fact, we even have our own in-house witch doctor to make sure everything goes well. This has been another very successful show, I think. Stephanie, why is your face turning red? Huh? Why? Unclose your... If I say something funny...
Unclose.
It's so unpolitically correct. I should have
laughed.
Oh, my God.
No one got to hear that she laughed. Anyway... We're here from the Heritage Radio Network, and we are on iTunes. You can always download this or any of our shows on iTunes. You can see Nick's stuff on Slice.com or on HamburgerToday.com or on Sirius Eats or on the Beef Aficionado, which is still live. Sebastian, you can go to his restaurant, which is again where?
142 West 10th Street, Bar Blanc Bistro.
And is a very good romantic little spot. And me, you can read on Time, eventually on Ozersky.tv, right now on RachelRay.com, and wherever else you seek to be bored by pompous meanderings. Stephanie's in the paper, and I'm Mr. Cutlets. See you next week on the Mr. Cutlets Show.
Mr. Cutlets, when you swing around that pork chop, I get a whiff of heaven every time you pass my doorstop with the chicken and the brisket and the marrow.